Thank you, Ruby. Good afternoon, everybody, and thank you for joining this Q&A session in respect of the third quarter report and updated outlook. I'm Martin Horgan, CEO. I'm joined today by Ross Jerrard, Chief Financial Officer. We're both dialing in from site in Egypt, and Alex Karst, Investor Relations, who's in London. I will open up with a short introduction and overview of the Q3 report, and then we'll step into Q&A. So to start, a brief comment on the third quarter performance, which to my mind was good across the key areas of safety, production and costs. The operating team continues to navigate COVID to deliver the results, and it was a quarter of compliance with plan, which will remain a key focus for management as we go forward. The fourth quarter forecast has now been confirmed over the last weeks. We have a plan to address the area of instability in the West Wall that was highlighted previously through a combination of mining and dewatering. We are being supported by our external consultants, Mike Peasold and Snowdens, on hydrogeology and geotech in this issue. Rehabilitation of the area will begin later in Q4 and continue into 2021. Over the balance of this year, mill feed will come from a combination of the lower grade Stage 5 north area of the open pit, underground and stockpile material, as has previously been identified. With spare mining capacity in the open pit, we're looking to get on the front foot in respect of the open pit stripping that has been neglected for too long. Over the back of this quarter of this year, we'll have a strip ratio of over 30 to 1 in November and December as we start to prep for next year and beyond. And this really is a microcosm of the operation today and leads into the outlook for 2021. The open pit has been somewhat painted into a corner for some time now. A short-term planning cycle has led to medium to longer-term considerations being parked in favour of nearer-term production goals. If I look back to the 2015 43-101 technical report, this calls for a life of mine strip ratio of 6 to 1. Sukari has operated an average ratio of 3.7 to 1 since 2015. This has led us to the point where the open pit has very limited flexibility for ore mining and needs a concerted waste stripping campaign over the next 3 to 4 years to play catch-up. This will provide access to better and medium high-grade ore feed while simultaneously offering greater operating flexibility. 2021 therefore represents the first step of a staged recovery towards previous production levels over the next 3 years. As we look at 21 and into 22, ore will come primarily from the Stage 5 north area of the open pit, which is at about 0.7 to 0.9 grams per tonne, with some benefit of the blended in Stage 4 west area that is being recovered. Underground operations are focused on the Ptah zone. This is a bulk tonnage target that sits about 5 grams per tonne, and there is not the possibility or opportunity to make up any shortfall from the open pit from higher grade underground material at this time. We are faced therefore with the situation of a reduced production profile at the same time we are required to invest in an increased stripping ratio that will allow recovery and production into the future. However, despite the situation, as we move through our reset planning, it is important to note that the operations remain resilient in terms of cash flow generation, which will support not only operations increased stripping, but also our planned exploration and capital projects. The Life of Asset Review has focused not only on the physical schedule required to reset Sukari, but also a series of cost and efficiency initiatives. None of those have been layered into the cost associated with this 21 outlook. We believe there are a number of opportunities to reduce the cost base that are well advanced in terms of their evaluation and will form part of the Life of Asset update to be given early December. A focus on cost and hence margin generation is a key focus as we look to the future, and the opportunity to push the operating costs towards the bottom of the cost curve will remain a focus for management. We retain a strong and flexible balance sheet. Some $350 million of cash and liquid are there today with no debt and no hedging. I believe we have the technical, operating and financial capacity to implement our Phase 2 reset plans, which seek to take Centamin through the next decade and beyond, with a focus on long-term planning cycle is based on good data from engineering, which supports shorter-term budgets. We will apply the compliance with plan approach to management, and our focus will be on, as the planning cycle will seek to embed both resilience and flexibility into our operations to enable us to deliver both predictable and sustainable cash flows. We remain cognizant of the importance of the dividend policy and its relevance to the sentiment investment case. While it's an ultimate decision for the board, we believe that we can continue to deliver these reset plans while recognising the importance of the dividend policy. The longer-term vision for Centamin remains unchanged and will be presented in early detail in December, but after this period of repositioning, I believe that over the longer term, the idea is to have Sukari as an asset consistently meeting its production targets based on our stated value over volume strategy while leveraging off our experience and infrastructure to explore the full potential of the Arabian-Nubian Shield across Egypt and other jurisdictions, including West Africa and beyond. I'll now open up to questions and answer session, and myself and Ross are available to take any questions you may have. Thank you, Ruby. Over to you for the Q&A, please.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by one on your telephone keypad now. If you change your mind, please press star followed by two. When preparing to ask your question, please ensure you are unmuted locally. Our first question is from Kevin Cardoudi of BOA. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my question. So you announced a lower 2021 production guidance and a higher cost guidance than previously communicated by Centamin. The mine used to produce 550,000 ounces of gold a year a few years ago. You are going to communicate a three-year production guidance in early December. Are you able to tell us today what you're trying to work towards? Should we see Centamin targeting 500,000 ounces a year in the next 2 years, or targeting the 550 that Sukari could produce in the past? And I have the same question for cost. Thank you.
Thank you. So maybe I'll answer the first question as part of the target for the production profile, then I'll pass across to Ross to talk about the costs. In terms of the Snowden Life of Asset Review, which I picked up in April when I joined, the part of the life of asset was to assess the operations as they stand, identify areas of data deficiency and identify areas of opportunity, and to seek to return the asset to previous production levels of circa 500,000 ounces per annum based on the current infrastructure we have. So in terms of the first phase, if you like, of the life of asset that we're looking at, the plan derived and devised is taking us on that steps journey back towards 500,000 over the next 3 years. So that will be a steps journey as we move up from this current level next year, which I believe and hope will be the first step, if you like, and as we step up towards that 500,000 level. Now, beyond that, the sort of the phase two of the life of asset, which we'll talk through next year, once we've collected the data that's deficient, work through all the potential optimizations and scenarios, is that may well look slightly different, and that we'll be assessing the sort of value over volume approach to understand, is there a smarter and better way to mine Sukari that leads to a longer sustainable outlook for us as we focus on cash flow generation as well. Now, that may well bring us back to the 500,000 level. It may well change from that as well. But certainly this first phase is designed to step us back towards that 500,000 ounces, and that's what we'll be talking in a bit more detail in early December. And the longer-term plan may well look at a change in strategy, but that will be communicated at that time. Ross, on the costs.
Thanks, Michael. Hi, Kevin. Yes, certainly over the next 3 years, we'll be focusing on the cost overlay. As Martin mentioned, these costs that have been put in the guidance are very much the base case costs as we stand today, and we'll giving more colour on that as part of the life of assets review. There are a number of initiatives, some of which have been mentioned previously, so the outlay of solar projects and possible alternate power sources, but there are a number of initiatives across the organisation, including loading, fires, maintenance, a whole suite of initiatives that we'll be giving you more colour on. But the underlying principle is all around free cash flow. We recognise the importance of the dividend policy and generating free cash flow. And even though we've taken a step back on the ounce profile, we believe that there's a significant chunk of cost that we can take out of the business and still underpin a free cash flow generation which aligns with the dividend policy.
Okay, thank you very much, Verka.
Thank you very much. Our next question is from Alan Spence of Jefferies. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my questions. I've got a couple, so I'll just take them one at a time. The first one around 2021 production. The implied quarterly run rate is a decent step up from the implication for the fourth quarter of 2020. What quarter in 2021 should be beginning to see that uplift, or how roughly should we be thinking about first half versus second half split?
Sure. Well, maybe we will talk to this in more detail on the 2nd December, Alan, but I would say that in terms of 2021, back end of this year, we'll be looking to open up Stage 5 North with that, stripping that I mentioned earlier. And that will provide that area as a primary sort of, ore source for the open pit. There is a little bit of material to come from Stage 4 North. And then with the rehabilitation of Stage 4 West, that should come into the second half of the year. So as you think about it, if you like, Stage 5 will provide a base load across the full year, a little bit of Stage 4 North to come in the first half of the year, and the Stage 4 West material to come in the second half of the year as currently scheduled. So I think that's probably a good way to think of it for now, and we'll certainly provide some more clarity and colour on that on the 2nd of December as we step into that life of asset plan.
Okay, that's helpful. And then turning to the underground, in the report it notes some improved mine planning and the use of backfill, which is giving you better dilution control. Can you just put a few numbers to that? I don't know whether you want to, if it's easier to say total underground or focus on a certain area, but how has those dilution numbers trended over, say, 3 to 4 quarters?
Probably an easier way. We had a two-hour mine planning meeting yesterday, Alan, and I think, we were talking about next year and around dilution control and, good grade control ahead of production, which allows for better planning, better operational control with backfill. So, for example, in the Qatar Stockworks area, which will form the bulk of underground feed for the next 2 or 3 years, that is a bulk area. And historically, mine planning would attribute around about a 30% dilution to sort of bulk mining in Qatar, and this year to date, mining in similar areas, we've actually achieved more like 10 to 12% of dilution. So a planning factor for next year will be based on 15%. So as you can see, sort of on an underground basis, where you're relatively constrained on tramming capacity to get material from underground, moving from 30% dilution assumption over break on the mining down to 15 as a planning target, but actually achieving 10 to 12% is a significant benefit. So, grade up, tons hauled down as well. So that's the sort of thing that we're looking at underground as we go forward to really sort of, design stopes off good grade control data and then good execution in terms of looking to maximize that grade, minimize tons with a fixed haulage capacity.
Perfect. And then my last one is around the CapEx reduction for this year of $30 to $40 million that was pushed in 2021. What was the reason for the delay in the spend? Were there certain activities that, because of COVID-19, you're just not going to be able to do, or why not do them this year?
Alan, the primary one was obviously the solar project, and that was really around the COVID and managing site and making sure that footfall on site was limited as much as possible. So whilst the project was still going ahead with a lot of the groundworks and some of the high-voltage integration systems and the like, we really wanted to limit the number of, foreign manpower and our labour force on site. So a lot of that was pushed to the right. There were also a number of other initiatives that we've pushed to the right. We haven't deferred completely. They will need to be done. But it was all around managing headcount and people on the site.
Okay.
But the primary one was solar.
Okay. Maybe I might have read it wrong in the report. I took that as being a reduction as of today, but I thought we already knew about solar, but perhaps that was my mistake there. Thank you, guys.
Yeah.
Thank you, Alan. Our next question is from Hunter Hillcoat of Investec. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, guys. Just a few questions from me, some of which would be follow-up. The actions that you'll be taking to remediate the pit and get access to Stage 4 strikes me it's going to take about 9 to 12 months to do this. Why is it going to take so long, given it's a reasonably localized issue, or is there a lot more work to it than I'm expecting?
No, I think, the area itself is not particularly extensive. It does form part of the stage five pushback. So part of the strategy is to get on with that stage five stripping and unload that area of instability from the top. It's also a localized area of dewatering via boreholes and pumps. So in terms of rather than just sort of focusing on the localized area to unload that, you know, it's part of that stage five pushback. So we might as well get on with the entire stage, do that as part of the normal course of mine scheduling and sequencing, and that will then allow us to sort of free up the area to come back in. So rather than go in and campaign a small area to make stage four west available earlier in the year, then have to go back and then, you know, carry on with a broader stage five pushback in the west wall, the plan is to move it all as part of the stage five pushback. That will naturally unload the area of instability, carry on with the dewatering, and then once that's completed, allow us to, well, we'll complete the full stage five pushback with that area, then go back in and mine it. So the plan is to bring that material into the second half of the year, and that's all just around that waste sequencing in the west wall.
Gotcha. You'd mentioned when you first talked about the geotech issue that you expected to be free cash flow neutral in the fourth quarter, assuming no changes to CapEx. Now, you have pushed out $30 million of CapEx and you're still free cash flow neutral. Was there an unexpected cost involved in all this?
There have been some of the COVID costs that have come through, but you know, in terms of the CapEx profile, you know, was back-end weighted. We have got a few big swing numbers that are sitting there. The prime one sits with these two excavators that we've ordered and when they actually sort of fall. So there's a $10 million swing that is sitting there, and it's whether it comes through and is delivered before Christmas or it's early in the new year. And then there was a bit of CapEx on the ventilation system that might not drop on that. It's somewhat conservative, and it's also driven by, I guess, the ultimate realized gold price as we go through. But it's, you know, basically neutral, or, you know, we're pushing as hard as we can that we will be positive, but it's not going to be a material change in the fourth quarter.
Okay, good. Thanks, Ross. And if I can just ask one last one. Within your guidance of 400 to 430 next year, what contributions you would be expecting from underground where operations continue as normal? Is it sort of the same level as this year?
So, look, I think, yeah, and sort of an easier, a good way to think about the underground is that we have clearly a sort of, you know, fixed underground capacity of, you know, 1.2 million tonnes per annum of total material moved. So that kind of fixes that for us. And then when we look at, the sort of the area we're mining in Qatar, that's about sort of 5 to 6 grams as well. So in terms of the underground ore mine next year, it'll be plus minus a million tons material. And then when we look at sort of a combination of development tons and stoping tons in and around the sort of 5 gram type material, development tons probably more like sort of 3.5 or something like that, then sort of, you know, that million tons of material moved will sit around, say, 4 grams plus minus next year. So that will, you know, be consistent. We're planning for just over 100,000 ounces this year from the underground. That's coming on budget. And then next year we might be slightly up on that, maybe towards sort of 105 to 110. But that really, you know, moves forward until we can get into the top of Horus and Horus Zone, where grades appear to improve by, you know, potentially a couple of 3 grams, is that, you know, Ptah will form the majority of our underground feed. And as I mentioned before, that is a bulk tonnage, you know, well, comparatively to a bulk tonnage, lower grade area as we go forward. So, yeah, consistent with this year as we roll forward.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next question is from Sharik El Havad of Harman Capital. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for the call. I wanted to first understand what happened with the waste. So I've read that you've detected movement in some of the waste. Is this normal for a miner to go through that, or is this poor waste management from the previous management or the company?
Sure, sure. Well, I think there's two parts to the issue that sort of we flagged up earlier in the month. So firstly, just talking to the guys at site over the last week, 10 days around that, is that, you know, one always tries to design open pit slopes not too conservatively because you're moving too much waste and not overly aggressively because it fails. So one's always looking to have a balanced approach to pit slope development. Localized small areas of movement in a bench or two are not uncommon in open pit operations and are often dealt with just as part of normal course of business. And talking to the team down here, that since 2015, small areas of instability are encountered from time to time across the open pit in its entirety. And I think that's certainly not a surprise at Sukari, and in my experience, fairly common across all open pits around the world. So I think the team have historically encountered small localized areas of either small failures or instability. And at that time, they've obviously dealt with them by, stabilizing them. And if there's any sort of risk to production, they were able to move to a different part of the pit, continue mining ore while they did the rehabilitation. So I think the localized instability, not uncommon at Sukari, certainly dated back to 2015 as a sort of regular course of business and dealt with in that manner. The real issue for the 2020 guidance was that once we had this area of instability, it's the fact that it coincided with the only really available ore source. And it's back to this issue around scheduling that, given a historical sort of lagging or lacking on strip ratio, is that the open pit hadn't been developed with multiple, or what was at a stage that didn't have multiple open sort of working areas available. So once we had this area of instability that impacted on the stage four west high grade zone, is that we couldn't move our equipment to another area and carry on mining while we rehabilitated. Once that area was temporarily sterilized or deferred, then we had nowhere else to go. And that is, a function of that sort of lack of historical stripping that I mentioned earlier. So to answer your question, not an unusual occurrence in open pits globally, certainly not an unusual occurrence in Sukari going back to 2015. However, it became a guidance issue given the lack of operational flexibility in the pit, given that lack of historical sort of long-term planning in the open pit sequencing.
Yeah. So should we factor in, a recurrence of these issues going forward? Is this something that, we might, have in a few years?
I think that as the operations team run forward now, is that when we look at sort of overall geotechnical evaluation of the pit, we'll continue to look to, optimize our pit slope such that we're not overstripping or indeed understripping in terms of angles. In terms of, having, response to localized issues, that's always important. We do look at the plan and we do risk-adjusted plans, so we anticipate that whatever the sort of, maximum open pit production might be, it is derated somewhat on a risk-adjusted basis to account for, the inevitable lumps and bumps along the way. So certainly the plans as they laid out do allow for small localized issues from time to time. We're not always running at 110% and pushing as hard as we can. We'll have to have a natural element of float in the plan. Not too significant. That's in there. I would like to think that these issues will occur in the future. It's part of mining, but I'd like to think that the planning going forward will allow for flexibility such that we can in the future hopefully, smooth them out without that material impact on guidance.
Okay. So the current issue you have in hand, how long would that take to resolve?
The overall stripping issue within the pits. Do you mean or the localized area of instability?
So the localized area for instability.
Yeah, no problem. As I said to the previous question, is that we. We will rehabilitate that area over the first half of next year as part of the normal course of operations, if you like, in terms of waste stripping and perform the dewatering. So, that higher grade material should be available second half, or we're planning for that to be available second half of next year. If we desperately wanted that ore, we could push it harder and bring it forward, but we'd be sort of moving equipment around the pit unnecessarily or in an unoptimal way. So mine that stage five west pushback area as part of the waste stripping. De-weight it from the top, de-water from pumps, and then bring it in second half of the year. And I would add questions have been asked around what's the additional cost for this rehabilitation. I think it's important to note that the unweighting of the stripping associated with this rehabilitation is part of the normal course of business of the pushback of stage five walls. So it's not any additional cost to it. It's just part of the OPEX as we continue to strip and push the wall back.
So the high grade, high grade operations. When do you think you'll be able to, you know, tap more into that? So you're basically saying 2022 is where we feel the, you know, maybe the cost per ounce of gold will drop, and as you're accessing more and more of this high grade gold.
Yeah, so clearly as we, you know, progress down through the open pit and open up additional areas, make them available, that will allow us to access more medium and high grade material as we roll forward. So there's going to be, you know, a period where we sort of, you know, live on a fairly thin stage 5 north material for 12, 18, possibly 24 months that'll contribute to, but then obviously starting to bring in medium and high grade. So certainly, you know, we'll start to see that higher grade coming through in 22 and into 23. And as I mentioned before, you know, stepping back towards that 500 over 3 years is the target. I think then, you know, in terms of playing both catch up with the stripping and then sort of, you know, offering operational flexibility, you know, we're talking about a 3 to 4 year stripping campaign to allow us to get back to that level of you know, compliance with plan as we move forward as well. So there will be, you know, this period. But once we're through that, you know, with the current plan as envisaged of this move back there, we should see ourselves returning in the medium term to a more sort of steady state sort of production profile and stripping profile on the current plan.
And in terms of the cash cost per ounce, do you see that coming through also all of the cost savings to normalized levels by 2022?
Yeah, I think, you know, as Ross mentioned before, the life of assets has been going on now for a little while, and we've got a number of opportunities that we'll talk to more on the 2nd of December. But, you know, as Ross talked to, I view it as there's a bucket of, if you like, operating efficiencies that we can layer in. These, you know, might individually be potentially smaller numbers, but cumulatively can make quite a difference. So whether it's truck dispatch systems, automated truck dispatch systems, you know, looking to extend tire life from 3,000 historically hours per trip tire up to 6,000 hours, for example. Looking at things like dual gas blend, where we're putting gas into the, you know, blending that with diesel into the trucks, which gives us lower operating costs, longer life between services. We're using sort of a lightweight, large volume trays on the back of the trucks that allow additional payload and reduce fuel usage because they're lighter. So a number of sort of, you know, technological, you know, advancements that we can layer into Sukari that in their own right individually, you know, are nice benefits. But when you layer in a number of these opportunities across the business, you start seeing cumulatively some nice changes. So I think there's a number of opportunities there. And these aren't things we're thinking about. For example, the dual gas blend, we actually got three trucks are currently on trial. Yeah, and three trays. So these are actually on trial now, effectively. And then so they're kind of, if you like, operating efficiencies, and they'll be layered in, say, from late 21 into 22 onwards, once committing to them. Solar, that will come on board sort of early 22. That's not in the current costs, and that would see power generation diesel reduced by about 30%. We're looking at, you know, gas potentially or as a power source for generation there as well. And there's some, you know, quite significant savings there if we can get gas into the site. And Egypt's a large producer of it, and start producing power using natural gas over diesel. And then obviously the carbon emission benefits there as well. So, you know, we feel that the cost base has sort of, you know, rolled forward at this stage. Is the current cost base hasn't been fully laid into that. And I think there's a number of things, and these aren't sort of, you know, aspirational targets. These are real targets that are being either implemented and studied right now, or like solar, for example, have been committed to and we brought in due course as well. So we feel there's a lot of opportunity in the cost base to take this asset down, you know, from where it currently at these levels, and take some costs out of the business that way.
So even with your aspirational, you know, cost savings, so it could, assuming all things go the way you want it to go in terms of reducing costs and operational efficiency, would you have guidance on the cash cost level come 2022, or are we waiting for the December 2nd release?
Yeah. Look, so as part of that capital markets or the life of asset update on the 2nd of December, we will go into more detail of that at that time. I'm sure there's lots of questions around future production profiles, cost and capex and so on. So we will get more into that detail at that time. And I'm just conscious that you know, today there's probably a number of people with lots of questions. So if it's okay, that I'd like to sort of, if you like, park that. I'm happy to engage in early December around some more of the detail around those initiatives.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next question is from Saeed Patel of KRN 2022 PLC. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, and good afternoon, gentlemen. You know, you've not mentioned about is in West Africa. I just wondering if you could shed some light in terms of how the drilling and exploration is going, and you know, following the disappointment at Sukari, is where do you see the opportunities in terms of adding value to Centamin going forward?
Absolutely, no problem at all. Well, Bassey West, we have completed an additional desktop study, a kind of bridging study, if you like, that was completed through August and September, and we're looking to evaluate the sort of opportunities for Bassey. We're also looking at the licensing situation there that we need to address around permit expiry, but certainly Bassey West is moving into the next iteration of evaluation, and I would hope that sort of this side of Christmas we'll have a better handle on, you know, what the actual development opportunity is associated with Bassey, scale of resource, reserve at this stage, potential production life, forecast capex and costs. So I think that will be coming through, and that work is actively ongoing now. Suffice to say, I think we have a good handle on both capital and operating costs in West Africa. And I think once we have that study out, that'll give us a good steer on where Bassey sits and whether Bassey makes sense for a company of sentiment scale. Is it an opportunity that sort of is value accretive for us, both in terms of cash flow generation, but importantly, management focus, or does that look better sort of elsewhere? But we won't front run that question, but suffice to say that, you know, we'll have a careful look at that as a development opportunity and make a decision. I think Doropo, we've just finished drilling for the season. That work has been completed now. We are basically currently packaging up that database. And we'll be handing that over to our resource consultants. We expect to see a mineral resource estimate sort of over the balance of the year, maybe just coming out early part of next year. And once we have that resource update, very keen to run a ruler over Doropo and really look at, you know, we've got a large mineral inventory there of resource ounces. I'm more interested in reserve ounces. You know, can we see the emergence of a project at Doropo that would you know, sort of, you know, warrant development? You know, ideally from my perspective, you know, if my Christmas list, wish list came early, you know, something in the order of a 2 gram ore body supporting an 8 to 10 year mine life, you know, with a conventional sort of CIL type approach, something like that, you know, we believe would work in terms of giving us an ounce profile and a cost profile that would work for us. So I think there's a lot of resource to tackle. It is somewhat spread out across a geographical area, but in terms of, the action there is that certainly keen to get an engineering study across the Doropo during the first quarter. ABC is a little bit earlier in the piece. There will be an exploration review of ABC. I don't think that will be at the point of having an engineering review passed over it, but certainly we'll be having a careful look at it. So I think the key thing is that with our new exploration manager, Howard Bills, who joined us, Howard's been really getting into the weeds on West Africa and really making sure that we're getting bang for our buck on expenditure, but also, you know, future paths forward. We've got Russell White, who joined us as projects engineer. You know, he's got a lot of West African experience in helping to run those bridging studies as well. So I think a very careful and thorough look at across the West African portfolio to make some decisions around next steps, and they'll be flowing through end of this year into next. I would note as well, you talked about sort of value creation in West Africa. We did mention, probably slightly locked in the Q3 announcement, that we did actually submit a number of bids as part of the recent Egyptian exploration bid round. I met the Minister of Petroleum while in Cairo last week and also EMRA and had some good discussions around, you know, sort of sentiment's commitment to Egypt and our desire to work with the government to develop the hard rock sector in Egypt as well. And I certainly see that, you know, if we're if we're lucky enough to be awarded or win the bid, to be awarded some ground and can sort of, you know, iron out the final bits of inevitable negotiation we'll have, is that I think that's a really exciting opportunity, because the sort of, you know, the potential of the Arabian-Nubian Shield here in Egypt is significant. It's never really been explored with modern exploration techniques. And I think that would be, you know, a really interesting sort of situation for us, of having the sort of Sukari infrastructure and cash flow over the longer term supporting a strategic land package in Egypt. I think it's quite an exciting opportunity. So outside of Sukari and getting that right, I still see sort of, you know, good opportunity to, certainly in West Africa, to realise value in one shape or another, and also really look to hopefully get stuck into some exploration across Egypt as well.
Yes. Thank you so much. And with regards to the bids that you put forward for the exploration licenses, are you able to share how many blocks that you've actually put a bid for, and when do you expect to see, what are your timescales in terms of getting an outcome back from the mineral authority?
So I won't share, you know, specific commercial details around that, because it's slightly commercially sensitive. What I would say is that you know, if we look at our, you know, strategy across Egypt in terms of exploration, with an existing mill and infrastructure here at Sukari, you can probably appreciate that, you know, looking for satellite feed that could, you know, feed directly into our mill is first prize. If we can find ounces that can be brought to our existing infrastructure, they're clearly the highest NPV. So you can probably imagine that we're looking within a radius of the mill, no real commercial sensitivity there. That would be quite straightforward. And then there are a number of areas that we've looked at which are distant from Sukari that we believe are interesting. They would likely necessitate sort of development of standalone operations, but obviously I'm not prepared to talk about those, as that's proprietary and potentially sensitive information. So suffice to say, you know, looking at satellite feed for Sukari and then other areas further from that. In terms of the response in the bid round, EMRA, sort of the chairman of EMRA we met, he indicated that they've received some good interest, that they were working through the technical qualification of the submitted bids, and then we're looking on the commercial stage thereafter. And I think, you know, we would hope, but can't commit to that this side of Christmas, that we might, you know, we might be able to get some indication of the feedback from that there as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next question is from Tyler Brawler of RVC. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Great. Thanks, thanks, Warren. Thanks, Ross. Thanks for the call, and also thanks for the clear guidance on 2021. Can I ask you that as you're moving through the underground planning process, I guess, and I don't want to front run the December update, but I guess just in general, how comfortable is your level of understanding of the resource or the reserves, I guess, for us? And I guess why is the resources in terms of, you know, potential to expand the undergrounds going forward? Is that sort of part of the thought process?
Yeah, no, look, absolutely. It's a really good question, Tyler. No, thank you for that. No, look, I think that, you know, when we look at the underground, clearly, you know, on a reserve basis, we've always got a couple of years ahead of ourselves, you know, sort of 2-3 years ahead. We're looking at that, and that rolls forward. And that, as you probably appreciate, is just a function of having exploration drill drives in place and then sort of drilling off that to prove up. So we're always looking to sort of roll ahead. One of the things I'm keen to look at is that can we sort of break the cycle where we've got to get away from a development ton, you know, shouldn't take away from a stoping ton. We should be able to do both. So if we can break that cycle, and we're looking at that, getting ahead of development, certainly as we move down towards Horus, and then importantly drill drives will be important for us. And when we look at the sort of the long-term planning that we've got laid out and based, you know, we've done conceptual plans out 10 years based on measured, indicated, inferred, and in some areas where we've got 3 or 4 drill holes, so very limited, but at least, you know, we recognize there's mineralization there that looks interesting, we can develop out to it. But within that long section, when we look at it, if you like, is that there's, you know, large areas of no stopes or development planned. And sort of talking to the GOs the last couple of days, we've been looking at this, is that, you know, is that based on drill data? And therefore, we know it's dead. It's like, no, it's based on lack of drill data, and therefore, we have no idea. So certainly my sense is that, you know, the underground is certainly not geologically constrained. We haven't found the edges. You know, we're not out of ore. You know, it really is drill constrained. We haven't sort of had the opportunity in the last while to really sort of feel our way down the ore body and extend, you know, what happens to Horus to depth, what happens to the Osiris throat, what happens along strike. You know, so there's plenty to go at, to my mind. And certainly, you know, there's one or two sort of hits that sort of sit slightly randomly out in the middle of nowhere, but there's one hit that I think it's at 50 centimeters wide, so relatively narrow, but running at almost 3 ounces, maybe 4 ounces a ton for 120 gram type material. So and that sits, you know, many hundreds of meters from anywhere else and just sits there in the Osiris contact thrust zone. So certainly I think the underground, certainly not geologically constrained, definitely drill constrained, and I think the sort of the excitement for us is, you know, how do we sort of get ourselves across that? And I think with Craig Barker, who's just joined as a group mineral resource manager, you know, that's one of the tasks for him now is to really work with the guys and unravel that geological model to depth and really start to map out where this can go from there as well. So I think, you know, certainly not geologically constrained at this stage. And my feeling would be looking at it, you know, more to come for sure. But we've got to basically get the work done to prove that up and take it from there.
No, that's very helpful. If I could ask as well, the new bid round, the new bid blocks, those are with a different, you mentioned a different tax and royalty regime. Would there be any potential for you to change Sukari's license into that regime, do you think?
If you could just see Ross Gerrard wince over a telephone call, that would have been quite a visual sight for you there. But no, look, I think, you know, that's under law 222, okay. And that's an act of parliament. And I think sort of, you know, we attempted to sort of open up that. I think sort of all sorts of trouble lies that way. So I think that, the, you know, in terms of the Sukari concession is that we are, you know, it is as is. We have no intention of opening up to change it. And, you know, the current bid round doesn't impact on Sukari at this stage. I think, you know, the new terms, speaking to the minister last week, you know, it was his aim to basically sort of, if you like, modernize the mining code to make it attractive to foreign investment. And I think this, you know, with the support of Wood Mackenzie, I think this is a huge step in moving away from that sort of production sharing oil and gas type mentality historically to open it up from there as well. So that would be interesting for us once we work through that, if we are awarded satellite feed under the new regime and how that interacts with Sukari. But, you know that in the event of that happy incident, then we'll have that discussion at that time.
That makes perfect sense. Great. Thanks very much, guys.